ambassador such as yourself probably discovered years ago on one of your clandestine visits. I walked toward him. Perfectly deadly, but a few tiny grains? They might be just enough to keep a king out of the way while you finalized your plans. Because if he died, there were so many of those troublesome princes in line for the throne who might appoint a new cabinet. The vice-regent stood. The man's a liar. I've never laid eyes on the substance before. A voice called from the back of the hall. Then how do you explain this? Footsteps echoed, boots on stone, a slow beat that demanded attention. Heads turned. Breaths were held for only a moment, then hushed whispers erupted into the air like a startled flock of birds. There was something about him, something familiar, but foreign too. Something that didn't belong. They quieted again as Caden walked down the center aisle toward us, another golden vial in his hand. I found this in your apartment, tucked in a locked drawer. He moved forward in a slow, deliberate line, soldiers stepping aside. Probably the same vial you used to keep Andreas, your legitimate son, out of harm's way. I saw the strain in Caden's face, his effort at control. The impact of seeing his father shook him like a storm. His eyes glistened, the calm destroyed, a thousand cracks in his voice. The boy who wanted only to be loved. Kept. Watching him struggle to hold back made his agony even more evident, and the depth of his pain swelled in me. The vice-regent stared as if seeing a ghost. Caden. That's right, father, he answered. Your son, back from the grave. Seems the Komazar was playing both of us. I was his assassin. Caden stopped, the cracks in his composure deepening, a quiver in his lip that tore through me as he spoke again. He trained me up for years, and for every one of them. I waited for the day I would kill you. Seems now there are a few in line ahead of me to do the job. This is madness. It is... The vice-regent turned, seeing the eyes fixed on him. His lies closing in, inescapable. He lunged, pulling a knife from beneath the table, and held it to the timekeeper's throat, dragging him to his feet and using him as a shield. They both stumbled backward toward the wood panel on the rear wall of the chamber, and the vice-regent's hand groped behind him. A little to the right, I thought as his fingers fumbled over the carved wood. There. He pressed, and a passage appeared, one known to every king, and the children who spied on him. He shoved the timekeeper away and disappeared into the passage. The chancellor glanced nervously to the side as if to make a break to follow. I wouldn't, I told him, and only seconds later, the vice-regent reappeared, stepping backward, a sword at his chest. Andreas held it and emerged with more soldiers behind him. His expression was as shattered as Caden's. You killed my comrades, Andreas said. You should have let me die with them. He lowered the sword and swung his fist, sending his father stumbling toward me. A line of blood ran from the corner of the vice-regent's mouth. I kicked the back of his legs, bringing him to his knees, and yanked on his hair so his eyes jerked up to meet mine. You killed my brother, I said, my face drawing close to his. He and every good man with him were massacred. They had no chance. There was no mistaking the dangerous strain in my voice, and I saw fear flash through his eyes. They were outnumbered 5-1 because you sent word ahead. I buried them all, Vice-Regent. I dug graves until my hands bled, while you were here sipping wine and conspiring to kill more. I whipped back to face the lords. This is the man who sent my brother and 32 soldiers to their deaths. He is the one who poisoned my father. He is the one who led his rat's nest of conspirators to plot against us all. I looked back at him, my knife pressing against his neck. You're going to die, Lord Vice-Regent, for your crimes against Morrigan, and if we don't get to my brothers and their squads in time, you will die slowly. That is my promise to you. He looked at me, his eyes defiant again. He whispered low so no one else would hear, I have an agreement with the Komazar. I may spare whichever lives I choose. I smiled. An agreement? The Komazar chose his fools well. It's too late, he said, still denying the reversal of our fortunes. You can't stop us, but I could... You're right about only one thing, Lord Vice-Regent. It is too late. For you. I have done exactly what you always feared. I have exposed the wicked. I stared at him, my breath seething, and I let go of his head. My blood-soaked bandage left a bright red stain against his white blonde hair. Lock him up, I said, and Rafe's soldiers dragged him away. The room grew hot, my head light. Lock them all up, I ordered, waving at the rest of the cabinet. And the Citadel Guard. I'll parse out later which of them is innocent and fit to serve. A lord stood.
You have no authority to order high-level...
Rafe cut him short. Princess Leia is ruling Morrigan for the time being. She can order anything she wants. A flurry of objections erupted, Lord Gowans rising above them all.
With all due respect, Your Majesty, this is not your kingdom, nor is it your decision to make. You are suggesting anarchy. Protocol and Morrigese law dictate that, until my husband recovers, my daughter assumes the position of King's Regent and will appoint her own cabinet.
The room snapped silent, every head turning toward the Queen on the balcony. She looked at me and nodded, guilt shimmering in her eyes.
Jezalia is now carrying out the King's judgments. She is a soldier in his army and will be true to his wishes.
She looked pointedly at Lord Gowan.
Does anyone object to this?
Before he could answer, Andreas called out, Jezalia, and fell to one knee. One by one, the soldiers with him did the same. A vote, a public count, and long-ago tradition I had heard of but never witnessed. The soldiers in the North Hall did the same, and the rumble of my name rolled through the room. Jezalia, the sister of their fallen comrade. My mother and those on the balcony around her did the same, repeating the name I had never heard publicly on their lips. Half a dozen lords followed suit.
It's decided, then, my mother said, rising again,
and Lord Gowan and the rest of the lords reluctantly nodded. In a matter of minutes, their world had been turned upside down. The upheaval was only beginning. I stepped forward, their faces blurring in and out of focus, the floor shifting unevenly.
Exposing the traitors is only the beginning of the work ahead of us, I said.
I heard my words echoing in a strange, remote way, and then the sound of my knife clattering to the floor.
The conclave is not adjourned. You need to know exactly what we're facing and what we need to do to survive. We'll reconvene again tomorrow, but for now,
I wasn't sure if I finished my last sentence. The last thing I remembered was Rafe's arm slipping around my waist and my feet lifting from the floor.
Chapter 66.
I heard weeping, felt the sweep of soft hands across my forehead, the scent of roses. Weeping. The trickle of water. The whisper of doors opening. Hushed voices. A cool wet cloth on my brow. Numb tugging on my arm. Will she lose it? Something sweet on my tongue. Warmth.
I'll keep the next watch. Go.
A heavy throb in my chest. Guarded footsteps. Weeping. Husky and strained. The slithering of a beast. The flick of its tail.
I'm coming for you. It is not over. I opened my eyes. The room was dark. My room. A log glowed in the hearth. Heavy drapes were drawn across windows, and I wasn't sure what time it was or how long I'd been out. I turned my head. Caden was slumped in a chair next to me, his feet propped on a stool, his head leaning back like he'd been asleep, but his eyes focused on me now as if the mere opening of my lids had wakened him. My hand was elevated on a pillow, heavy, a numb throb pulsing beneath the fresh bandages. I wore a soft nightgown. "Dear gods," I groaned, remembering my last moments in the hall. "Please don't tell me I fainted in front of everyone." A hint of a smile tugged at the corner of his mouth. "Passed out. There's a difference. It happens when you lose enough blood to fill a bucket. You're not immortal, you know. I don't know how you stayed on your feet as long as you did. If it's any comfort, I think a few of the lords fainted just watching you carried out of the room."
Carried. Wraith carried me. I wondered where he was now. I glanced toward the outer chamber.
"He's taking care of a few things with his soldiers," Caden offered, reading my mind.
"Oh," I said simply.
For someone who had traveled thousands of miles with a highly trained squad to help me, he seemed to be keeping his distance from me. Even back at the armory, he had sent someone else to break down our door.
"Who did this?" I asked, lifting my bandaged hand.
"Your mother and aunts, and a physician, one called from the village. The court physician is locked up. So are the others."
I heard the catch in his tone. "Others. And one in particular." I reached out with my good hand and held his. "How are you doing?" I asked gingerly. He looked at me, hesitating, the pained expression in his eyes returning.
"I don't know." He shook his head. "Just before I walked into that hall, I thought I was going to be sick. Sick like a little schoolboy."
I heard the disgust in his voice. "There is no shame in that, Caden."
"I'm not ashamed. Just angry that he could still do that to me. I couldn't even recognize myself. I didn't realize what seeing him after all this time would do to me."
He shook his head.
"I don't know how one person can be so afraid and so full of rage at the same time."
I understood completely. I was still afraid, still angry, but mostly right now I was aching for everything I saw in Caden's face. He paused, a deep breath filling his chest, his nostrils flaring. He hadn't changed. Even then, when he looked at me, all he saw was a liability. In that moment, if he could have sold me off for another coin, he would have. I felt like an 8-year-old boy again. I squeezed his hand.
"You're not a boy, Caden. You're a man. He can't harm you anymore."
"I know." His brows pulled together. "But look at how many others he's hurt. Andreas, he's worse off than me. Maybe I was lucky to be tossed out when I was. He can't get his mind to grasp what happened, that men in his company that he trusted with his life were betrayed by his own father."
He looked up at me. "He was half crazed when he rode out with scouts to find your brothers and their squads."
"Did you?"
"Yes. Rafe and Sven interrogated the prisoners. They got nothing. And we sent 4 different units riding the fastest Ravians. You were still issuing orders when Rafe laid you on the bed, and those were just 2 of them."
"I don't remember."
"Most of your words were mumbled, and Rafe finally told you to shut up and listen to the physician."
"Did I?"
"You passed out again. I guess that's listening."
"What time is it?" I asked.
He shrugged. "Past midnight."
He told me what had transpired after I passed out, most of which he had learned from my Aunt Burnett. The entire citadel had been bustling awake through most of the night. After leaving me,
my mother had seen to my father. She had him moved back to their marriage chamber and threw out all the medicines the court physician had ordered for him. He was bathed and given herbal drinks to flush his system. Caden didn't know enough about the poisoning effects of Golden Thanis to know if it would help. Vendens knew not to touch it. Just a nibble could bring down a horse. Andreas had recovered, but he was young and healthy and hadn't been poisoned over a long period of time the way my father had. I worried that it might be too late to reverse the effects of the poison, and my father would be trapped in a foggy stupor for the rest of his life. I worried that it might be too late for everything.
Will all this be enough, Caden?
To stop the Komazar? I don't know. I think the rule Rafe threw your way is shaky, even with your mother's nod of support.
I saw it, too. Parading a first daughter out for ceremony was one thing. Having her rule the kingdom was another.
The troops Andreas marched into the hall with had supported me, but the majority of the lords weren't convinced.
I think your lords are still dubious about the threat, he added.
I didn't expect anything else. They had a lifetime of believing that Morrigan was the chosen remnant and nothing could bring it down.
I'll convince them, I said, and prepare them to oppose Venda.
Then what? As much as we both want to stop the Komazar, I can't forget I'm still Venden.
His eyes searched mine, worried.
I know, Caden.
His fears renewed my own. But we both need to remember that there are two Vendas. The Komazar's Venda that's on its way here to destroy us, and the one that we both love. Somehow, together, we have to make this work.
But I wasn't sure how.
We both knew the Komazar and Council would never back down. The prize was in their sight, and they intended to have it.
It's my turn now to dine on sweet grapes in winter.
I lay there, Caden's hand still in mine, the coals of the hearth dimming, my lids growing heavy, the future swirling behind them, and I heard the soft moans again. This time, I knew it wasn't my mother or my aunts I heard weeping. These cries came from far away, past a savanna, beyond a great river, past rocky hills and barren glens. These cries came from the clans of Venda. He had slaughtered more for whispering the name Jessalia.
Chapter 67, Pauline.
You need to name him. But I had no name. My mind was too swollen with other thoughts to make such a decision. I eased the child from the wet nurse's arms and rocked him, fingering his locks. They were the color of a bright, high sun, like Mikhail's. But after what Mikhail had done, I didn't want to think that he was any part of this child. You have kin, Pauline. You are not alone. But my aunt's cold stare surfaced again and again. After Leah's hand had been treated and bandaged, we had cut away her clothes and washed her. She lay unconscious, limp, and they stared at her battered body lying across the white bedding. A diary of these past months was written across her skin. They saw the jagged scar on her thigh, the nick on her throat, the fresh cut on her lip where the Chancellor had struck her, the bruises on her face where the guards had hit her. And when we turned her to wash her back, they saw the raised scar on her ribs from where an arrow had been cut away. And then there were the remnants of the kava trailing over her shoulder. As every new mark was discovered, the queen or Leah's aunts choked back a sob at her broken body. And the queen's attendant, my own aunt, cast me an angry glare. "This is what you let her into," she finally snapped accusingly. I turned my attention back to rinsing a cloth in the basin, unable to meet her gaze. Guilt rushed through me. It was true. I was Leah's accomplice. If I hadn't helped her, she might never have left. But if she hadn't... I looked up, staring into my aunt's face that was rigid with anger and disappointment. It was her choice to make. She pulled in a startled breath. It was your duty to stop her, not... I don't regret my decision, I said, and I would do it again. My aunt's mouth fell open, appalled. But Lady Burnett reached out to her, putting a hand on her shoulder. Pauline is right, she said softly. It was Leah's choice, and beyond any of us, to stop her. My aunt remained silent, but condemnation still shone in her eyes. The queen sobbed quietly at Leah's bedside. Leah's hand clutched to her cheek. I blinked back tears. I have something else I need to attend to. I spun and left the room, stepping out into the dark hallway. When I had closed the door behind me, I leaned against it, trying to swallow away the painful throb in my throat. Doubt flooded through me. I hadn't even told her about the baby yet.
What is it?
Caden had rushed out of the shadows toward me. I'd forgotten he'd been waiting for word on Leah. She's fine, I said. We don't know about her hand yet, but the bleeding has stopped and her heart is strong.
Then what is...
He lifted his hand toward my cheek, then pulled back as if afraid to touch me. Even in the darkest shadows, he had seen my tears. But there was still a wall between us. Distrust I couldn't set aside, even now, and he knew it. I shook my head, unable to speak.
Tell me,
he said quietly. My chest shuddered with uneven breaths. I forced a smile that I felt nowhere inside, but the tears flowed down my cheeks unchecked. I have only one living kin in this entire world, and she thinks this is all my fault. A frown pulled at the corner of his mouth.
Your fault? We've all made mistakes, Pauline. And yours...
He reached up and his thumb grazed my cheek, wiping away a tear.
Your mistakes are the very least among them.
I saw the regret in his eyes, my hurled accusations still swimming behind them. He swallowed.
There is not only blood kin, Pauline. Some family you are born with. Other family you choose. You have Leah. You have Gwyneth and Bertie. You are not alone in this world.
A long quietness hung between us, and I wondered if the mention of family had reopened his own wounds. I saw the same pained expression on his face that I had seen hours ago when he confronted his father. I wanted to say something. Offer him some sort of kind words like he had just given me. But something fearful still paced behind my ribs. He drew in a deep breath and filled the silence for me.
And you have the baby, too. You need to give him a name.
A name. It shouldn't be so hard. I will, I had whispered, and brushed past him. Telling him he'd be able to see Leah soon. I placed the baby back in the wet nurse's arms. I need to leave him here a little longer, I told her. The Citadel is still in turmoil. It is no place for a baby. I'll be back. She nodded understanding, promising to take good care of him. But I saw the doubt in her eyes. She rubbed a gentle knuckle over his cheek, and my still unnamed baby nestled happily into her arms.
Chapter 68.
A soft red hue seeped behind the edges of the drapes. For 17 years it had been my familiar signal of dawn. It was odd to move about my room again. Home. But it didn't feel the same.
It was tight, confining, like trying to pull on a jacket that no longer fit. Too much had changed. My mother hadn't been by. Aunt Burnett and Aunt Cloris had come 3 times during the night to check on me, both of them weary, with red-rimmed eyes. They gave me doses of the thick, syrupy medicine the physician had prescribed.
"It will help restore your blood," Aunt Burnett whispered, and kissed my cheek.
When I asked her how my father was, her face dimpled with worry, and she struggled with a hopeful reply, saying it would take time. Aunt Cloris cast wary glances at Caden, who dozed in the chair beside me. She didn't like it, but clucked only mildly at the breach of protocol. Finally, late in the night, she shooed him off, having prepared a room elsewhere in the Citadel for him. I had slept fitfully after that, one dream dissolving into another, and I finally shook awake when I dreamed of Regan and Bryn riding together in a wide valley. I didn't want to see what came next. Per Aunt Burnett's orders, I took another dose of the sickly sweet syrup. I didn't know if it was the sleep or the elixir, but I was feeling steadier on my feet. I tied back the drapes, and light flooded into the room. I looked at the bay, a rare clear day where the rocky island of Lost Souls was visible in the distance, its white crumbling ruins catching the morning sun. Ancients who were once imprisoned there were said to still rail against walls that no longer existed, caught in a timeless prison of another kind, memories caging them as strongly as iron bars. My attention traveled west to the last standing spire of Golgotha, still leaning, facing its imminent demise with stoic grace. Some things last, and some things were never meant to. I heard a tap at my door. Finally. There were clothes in my dressing chamber, all still locked in trunks, the ones Dalbrecht had dutifully returned. They had never been opened. But if I was to address the conclave this afternoon, or for that matter, any of the many tasks before me, I couldn't do it in a thin, borrowed nightgown. Aunt Burnett had gone to fetch someone with keys. I was about to search for a hairpin so I could pick them open myself. It was going to be a long and full day. "Come in," I called as I pulled back a drape from a window in the dressing chamber. "In here." I heard footsteps. Heavy ones. Boots. My heart thumped against my breastbone, and I stepped back into my room. "Good morning," Rafe said. He was back in his own clothes, no longer needing to hide who he was. My chest beat harder. Every emotion I had tamped down bubbled up at once, and I heard the eagerness in my voice. "I was wondering when you'd come by." There. I saw it in his eyes again, saw it in his swallow.
"You're looking better than you did last night," he said.
"Thank you for coming to help."
"I'm sorry I didn't come sooner. I guess I was waiting for a note."
"I recall you telling me not to send any."
"Since when have you listened to me?"
"Since when have you paid attention to my notes?"
His worried expression was replaced with a grin, and that was all it took. I ran toward him, reaching for him, his arms folding around me, both of us holding each other like we'd never let go, his fingers sliding through my hair, his faint whisper of Leah in my ear. But when I tried to turn my lips to his, he pulled away, stepped back, grasping my arms and deliberately returning them to my sides. I looked at him, confused.
"Rafe?"
"There's something I need to tell you."
"What is it?" I asked, the panic rising in my voice. "Are you all right? Did something happen to—"
"Leah, listen to me." His eyes burned into mine.
"You're scaring me, Rafe. Just say it." He blinked, something shifting in his expression. He shook his head as if his thoughts were racing ahead of him.
"I need to tell you about the circumstance of... The truth is... What I need to tell you is... I'm betrothed."
My mouth went dry.
dry. I waited for him to laugh, to declare it a poor joke. He didn't. I stared at him, still not believing it. My mouth opened to say something, but I couldn't think what. He loved me. I knew he did. I had just seen it in his eyes. At least I thought I had. Yes, we had parted ways weeks ago, but was that all it took to forget? Less than a season of days? I searched for something to say. You found someone so soon? Which kingdom? I asked, the words numb on my tongue. He nodded. She's from Dalbrek. The assembly wanted me to marry right away. They thought it would add the stability that was needed. I turned away, blinking, trying to focus, trying to make sense of this. Your kingdom is in such terrible straits. Both of my parents were dead for weeks. I was missing. The kingdom was without a ruler. It created problems. More than we expected. The general who challenged you? He's been one of them. I spun around to face him. Do you love her? He looked at me, stunned. I don't even know her. You didn't know me before our wedding either. You mean our wedding that didn't happen? I stared at him. He meant this. He was going to marry someone else. On the assembly's advice. He was meeting his duty, just as he had when he came to Morrigan once to marry me. Was that all marriage was to him? Duty? In the same breath, I hated myself for disparaging his motives. What had I done but leave him behind because of my duty? I heard Jeb's words again. His word is true. I didn't want it to be, but I said things to fill the painful silence. Things I didn't mean or even hope for. Perhaps it will work out better for you two. He nodded.
Maybe so.
We stood there looking at each other. My insides were jumbled, as though everything had been kicked loose and shaken. Strangely, he looked exactly how I felt. So where does this leave us? I asked. He paused as if trying to figure it out himself, but his gaze still remained locked on mine.
It leaves us as two people, three, who need to stop the Komazar.
Three?
You told me I had to make my peace with Caden. I have.
His tone was wooden. Aunt Burnett rushed in, jingling the keys. I have them! She stopped when she saw Rafe, as if she knew she had interrupted something. I heard myself speaking, sounding like my mother rising to the occasion, trying to gracefully smooth out an awkward moment. Aunt Burnett, I'd like to introduce the King of Dalbrek. King Jackson, this is my aunt, Lady Burnett. We met last night, briefly, Your Majesty, she said, and curtsied deeply, giving Rafe the full honor of his position.
Lady Burnett,
Rafe answered and took her hand, lifting it to his lips, uttering polite niceties, and then excused himself, turning to leave without another word to me. He walked toward the door. How many times did I have to let him go? No more. This was the last time. He hadn't even made it through the door when footsteps sounded in the outer chamber. Gwyneth rushed in, followed by a cluster of Rafe's soldiers, with the field marshal in their grip.
"This couldn't wait," she said apologetically, seeing me still in my nightgown. "It's about your brothers."
I paced my room. I had sensed last night that the field marshal was innocent, but I had felt myself fading. It was safer just to order them all locked up where they would be secure until I could question them.
"Why didn't you tell us this last night?" I demanded.
"In front of everyone? After what you revealed? I didn't think it wise, considering I'd just found out about the snakes infesting the ranks.
It's not something we want everyone to know, in case it affords the princes any advantage. I demanded to speak directly to you from the moment I was whisked away, but he wouldn't listen.
He nodded toward Rafe.
Everyone wanted to speak with her. Leah was indisposed. I told you to talk to me, Rafe answered. The king of a foreign nation who stormed in during a conclave. I'm supposed to immediately trust you with every kingdom's secret.
The field marshal looked at Gwyneth.
This kind lady finally listened to me.
Gwyneth admitted she had gone down to the cellar where the prisoners were held in separate rooms to gloat at the chancellor and to reassure herself that he was still there. She had been woken by a nightmare, dreaming he'd broken loose and was headed for Taravin. When the field marshal saw her pass by the small opening of his cell door, he begged for a moment to speak to her. All he would say was that he had news about my brothers that I needed to hear. He told me about a conversation he'd had with my brothers before they left. He hadn't been happy about the diplomatic mission proposed by the cabinet, and he was surprised my brothers had agreed to it so easily. He suspected they were up to something. He privately confronted the eldest prince, asking him what they were plotting. Regan hadn't tried to deny it.
You know what we're doing. The same thing you'd do if your sister was wrongly accused.
I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that.
I thought you would, Regan had answered.
And then the field marshal wished them luck.
I sat on the bench at the end of my bed, resting my face in my palms. My breath swelled in my chest. He said my brothers had never planned to go on to Gitos or Courtenay after they set the memorial stone in the City of Sacraments, only on to a few cities to recruit more help, and then they were heading to Venda to get me back and prove I wasn't a traitor, which meant the trackers we had sent were headed in the wrong direction. By the time they figured out the princes had planned a new route, they would likely be too far behind to catch up. But this also meant those lying in wait to ambush them had to regroup, too. It might give my brothers an advantage, but even if they evaded those sent to kill them, going all the way to Venda was a sure death sentence. Even a dozen regiments at their sides wouldn't be enough to defend themselves against the Vendan army they would meet.
"The Aberdeen garrison," I said. "After what happened to Walther's company, that's where they'll go next, to recruit more and double their numbers. We'll send riders there."
Rafe shook his head. "No. Your brothers would be past there by the time riders arrived. We have an outpost northeast of the City of Dark Magic, Fontaine. We can try to intercept them near there."
"That's even farther away," the field marshal scoffed. "How would you get a message to them in time?"
I looked at Rafe, my heart gripped in a fist.
"You have Valspri with you?"
He nodded. We sat down at my desk immediately to write messages. One from me to my brothers so they would know the interception wasn't an attack by Dalbrecht soldiers. The other from Rafe to the commanding colonel at Fontaine to set patrols combing the landscape for Morrigie's squads. It was still a long shot. There were miles of wilderness, and those lying in wait to ambush my brothers could still reach them before they were warned. But it was something. Rafe looked over my message and rolled it up with his. No one else saw what he wrote, because it was written with ciphers known only to his officers.
"I told the colonel I wanted a well-armed battalion to escort your brother's squads home if he finds them."
Alive? It was unsaid, but I saw the word looming behind his eyes. He left to get the message into the hands of the Valspri handler. If all went well, he said, it would be there by tomorrow. But he warned me there would be no return message. It took months to train a bird to fly to a distant location. They weren't trained to return to Civica. I looked at the field marshal, nodding thanks and apologies in the same gesture. "And from this point forward, you must trust the King of Dalbrecht as one of our own. His word is true." I told the soldiers to release him and ordered the huntmaster, the timekeeper, and trademaster freed as well. The rest of the cabinet would remain in their cells to face trial and execution. If I didn't kill them first. My threat to the vice-regent had been real. If any harm came to my brothers or their comrades, his death would not be an easy one.
Devastation looked down on us, but a green valley lay ahead. The end of the journey was in sight at last, and I did what I knew I would do all along. I buried my knife deep in my betrothed's throat, and as he gasped for his last breath, as his blood soaked into the earth, there were no tears among any of us, especially none from me. The Lost Words of Morrigan. Chapter 69, Rafe.
It was a warm, dark hole I climbed into as I had interrogated the prisoners that morning. It had no bottom, a free fall that invited me to let go. All I could see in the darkness as I asked questions were barrows full of bounty taken from Dalbrecht's dead soldiers. With every swing of my fist, I saw Leah sitting in a dank, Venden holding cell, grieving for her dead brother. And when I drew my knife on the vice-regent, I saw only Leah, bleeding and limp in my arms. Sven had finally pulled me back. The vice-regent dabbed his lip with his sleeve, then smirked. "I had planned on killing you both, you know. An ambush staged to look like a common robbery by Dalbrecht bandits on your way back home after the wedding." His eyes glowed with smugness. "You think I don't have my reasons, just as you think you have yours? Don't we all get tired of waiting for what we want? The only difference between you and me is I stopped waiting." "The man is insane," Sven had muttered as he stopped my fist mid-swing. "Enough," he said, and pushed me away. He locked the cell door behind us, and then turned my attention elsewhere, reminding me that I still needed to tell Leah. I entered the quarters that Leah's aunt Cloris had ushered me into earlier, still feeling like an intruder. It seemed wrong to be staying in the room that Leah's brother had once shared with his bride, Greta. Most of their belongings had been removed, but in the corner of the wardrobe I found a pair of soft kid gloves, sized for a woman's hand, and on the bedside table two delicate, pearl-tipped hairpins. I took one look at the large four-poster bed and chose to catch an hour of sleep on the settee instead. I would have preferred staying on a bedroll in Aldred Hall, where many of my men were, but Lady Cloris insisted I take the room, and I didn't want to begrudge her hospitality. When I walked in, Orin was lying sideways across my bed, asleep, with his mouth hanging open and his legs dangling over the side. Jeb was spread out on the settee, his eyes closed and his hands neatly woven across his stomach. They'd both been up all night, securing the citadel and assigning posts. Only Dalbrecht's soldiers were to guard the prisoners until we were certain there were no more Venden soldiers among the ranks. Sven was seated at a table, eating a game pie and reviewing files seized from the vice-regent's apartments. Tavish sat at the other end, his feet propped up on the table, sifting through papers in his lap. "Anything?" I asked. Sven shook his head. "Nothing of import that might help us. He's a clever devil." I grabbed a boiled egg from a tray of food and washed it down with milk. "Did you tell her?" Tavish asked. Both Jeb and Orin opened their eyes, waiting for an answer too. I nodded. "She needed to know, boy," Sven said. "Better to hear it from you than have it spill out at an inopportune time." I looked at him, incredulous. "She's going to address the assembly today. Now is a bad time." "So there was no good time. It still had to be done. It's behind you now." It would never be behind me. Her dazed expression when I told her cut a hole through me. I shook my head, trying to blot the memory out. It's not an easy thing to tell the girl that you love more than life itself that you're going to marry someone else. Sven sighed. Easy things are for men like me. The difficult choices are left to kings. The general's a conniving bastard, Oren said, yawning, who needs an arrow in his tight ass. Jeb sat up and grinned. Or I could take care of him quietly. Just say the word. He made a clicking sound, the snap of a neck, as if showing how quickly it could be done. It was only a show of solidarity. I knew neither would ever assassinate a legitimate officer of Dalbrek, nor would I let them, though it was tempting. And what would you do about the general's daughter? Kill her, too? Oren snorted. All she needs is one look at my pretty face, and she'd call it off with you. Besides, I'm an archer. I bring home dinner. What do you have to offer? Besides a kingdom, Sven mumbled. You could call it off and try to weather it out, Tavish offered. Sven sucked in a breath, knowing the consequence. My position in Dalbrek was precarious. Weathering it out was a risky option. I had everything to lose and nothing to gain. The betrothal was the general's victory and my own private hell, the cost of saving Leah's life. And while the general played his games, his daughter was caught in the middle of it. I remembered the fear in her eyes and her trembling hand as she signed the documents. The girl was afraid and wanted no part of me, but I had ignored it because I was desperate and angry. Let's move on, I said. What happens between me and Leah isn't something that needs to be on the table. We have an unbeatable army marching this way. You don't believe that, Sven said, finishing off his pie, or you wouldn't be here. I got a look at the troops this morning, and it's worse than we thought. Azia called it pathetic. Sven grunted. Pathetic is a strong word. The few I saw seemed astute and able. The few you saw is exactly the problem. It's not that they lack skill or loyalty, but their ranks are depleted. This is their biggest training post, but they've been dispersed all over Morrigan in small units. Only 1,000 are stationed here right now. Gathering them all back here will take weeks. Even then, it won't be enough. The Vendan army may not all be headed this way. Dalbrek is a closer target. We'll sort it out. First things first. The assembly this afternoon. Strategizing a plan after that. A plan. I had decided not to tell Sven what I had done. It would either work out, or it wouldn't. And telling him would only incur a blistering lecture about being impulsive. But it hadn't felt impulsive when I rode to the camp outside the city gates, where the handler was ensconced with the Valspray. After I gave him the messages, I looked back at Civica, and the weight of its history settled over me. I felt the centuries of survival. This was the beginning. The first kingdom to rise after the devastation. The one all the other kingdoms were born from, including Dalbrek. Morrigan was a jewel the Komazar hungered for, a validation of his own greatness, and once he had it, along with its abundant resources, no kingdom would be spared. My doubts vanished. He was coming here first. Sven eyed me suspiciously, as if he could see the inner workings of my mind. He set his papers aside. What did you do? We had been together for too many years. I sat down in an overstuffed chair and threw my feet up on the table. I added a request in my message to the colonel at Fontaine. A request? An order. I told him to send his troops to Civica. Sven sighed and rubbed his eyes. How many? All of them. All of them as in all of them? I nodded. Sven jumped to his feet, jarring the table and spilling his cider. Have you lost your mind? Fontaine's our largest outpost. 6,000 soldiers. It's our first line of defense for our western borders. I sent the same message to Bodine. By now, Oren and Jeb were both sitting up, Sven sat back at the table and rested his head in his hands. Oren whistled at the staggering news. I figured this was a good time to leave. Any more revelations and Sven might burst a blood vessel. My decisions were made, and there was no changing them now. "Not a word to anyone," I said. "This isn't an answer to all their problems. They need to remain earnest in their efforts." I walked toward the door. "Now where are you going?" Sven asked. "First things first," I said. As much as I hated to admit it, Caden would be a critical part of the plan to save Morrigan. I promised to make some peace. I checked his room. When he wasn't there, I followed my next best guess, and I was right. I spotted him, one hand pressed to the wall, poised at the top of the stairs that led to the lowest level of the citadel, where the prisoners were kept. He stared down the dark stairwell, so consumed by his thoughts, he didn't notice me at the end of the passageway. He is Moragiz, I thought, just as Leah had claimed. He was born from a line of nobility that went all the way back to Piers, one of the fiercest warriors of Morrigan lore. A holy guardian, Sven had called him. He had given me a brief history lesson the night before, when I noted my surprise at Caden's parentage. A statue of a muscled, powerful Piers dominated the entrance to Piers' camp. Caden didn't look powerful now. He looked beaten. But last night, I swallowed, remembering how they looked together when I went to check on Leah during the night. I had seen his hand resting on her bed, and her hand curled over his. Both of them were asleep, peaceful. I backed out of the room quietly, so they wouldn't see me. Maybe that was what had given me the courage to tell her the truth. I knew she didn't love him in the same way she did me. I had seen her eyes when she first saw me in the armory, and then the hurt when I told her about my betrothal. But she cared about Caden, too. They shared something that she and I didn't. The roots of one kingdom, and their love for another. He still hadn't noticed me. Instead, he stared into the darkness, and his hand absently fingered the sheathed dagger at his side, as if a scene was playing out in his head. I could imagine what it was. I swallowed my pride and approached him. I had told Leah I had already made my peace with him. Now, I actually had to do it.
Chapter 70, Caden.
I didn't hear him coming until he was upon me. I startled and turned. "What do you want?" I asked. "I'm here to talk about..." I swung, catching him in the jaw, and he flew backward and fell. The sword buckled at his side, clattering on the stone floor. He slowly got to his feet, his expression livid, and he wiped the corner of his mouth, blood staining his fingertips. "What the hell is the matter with you?" "Just preempting a shot from you. I seem to recall that the last time you snuck up on me, wanting to talk, you punched me, then slammed me up against the barracks wall, accusing me of all kinds of delusional things. Is this a preemptive strike or a payback?" I shrugged. "Maybe both. What are you sneaking around for this time?" He studied me, his chest heaving, rage sparking in his eyes. I knew he wanted to take a swing, but somehow he managed to keep his hands at his sides. "One, I wasn't sneaking," he finally said. "And two, the reason I came was to thank you for staying by Leah's side." "Thank me? So you can take her back to Dalbrecht now?" The anger drained from his face. "Leah is never going back to Dalbrecht with me." I was suspicious of the sudden turnaround in his demeanor, almost as much as his declaration. "I'm betrothed to another," he explained. I huffed out a disbelieving breath. "It's true," he he said. The news has been heralded all over Dalbrek. Leah will never be going there. It was the last news I expected to hear. He was moving on? Then why are you here? His lips quirked in an odd way. He didn't look like the arrogant farmer or emissary, or even the prince I had known. I'm here for the same reasons you are. The same reason Leah is. Because we want to save the kingdoms that matter to us. They all matter to Leah. His expression darkened. I know. And that pains you. We've all had to make hard choices and sacrifices. I recognize the one you made helping us escape from Venda. I'm sorry I didn't say it before. The words came out stiff and practiced, but were still an apology I never expected to hear. I nodded, wondering if he was still going to take a crack at me. There hadn't been time when we met up at the cottage. Finding Leah, Pauline, and Gwyneth had been all that mattered. I reached out cautiously, offering my hand. Congratulations on your betrothal. He took it with the same caution. Thank you, he answered. Our hands returned to our sides in the same measured moves. He continued to eye me as if there was more he wanted to say. I had heard him come in last night and saw him when he quietly left the room. For someone betrothed to another, he didn't hide his feelings well. I'll see you out in the plaza, he finally said. What she faces there today will be harder for her than the traitors she confronted last night. She won't be facing those she needs to throw in prison, but those she needs to rally. She'll need us both there. He started to leave, then glanced down the dark stairwell and back at me. Don't do it, he said, his gaze meeting mine. The time will come, but not now. Not this way. You're better than him. And then he walked away. I left my weapons with the guard before I entered the cell. My father's eyes locked onto mine, and immediately all I saw in them was calculation again. It never ended. Son, he said. I smiled. You really think that will work? I made a terrible mistake. But a man can change. Of my sons, I loved you the most, because I loved your mother. Catherine, stop! I ordered. You don't throw people you love out like garbage. You don't bury them in unmarked graves. I don't want to hear her name on your lips. You've never loved anything in your life. And what do you love, Caden? Leah? How far will that get you? You don't know anything. I know that blood is thicker and more lasting than a fleeting affair. Is that all it was with my mother? The one you claim to have loved so much, a fleeting affair? His brows pulled together, plaintive, sympathetic. Caden, you are my son. Together we can... I'll make you a deal, father. His eyes brightened. You sold my life for a single copper. I'll let you buy yours back right now for the same. Give me a copper. It's little enough to ask. He looked at me, bewildered. Give you a copper? Now? I extended my palm, waiting. I don't have a copper! I withdrew my hand and shrugged. Then you'll lose your life, just like I lost mine. I turned to leave, but stopped to tell him one last thing. Since you plotted with the Komazar, you'll die by his justice, too. And just so you know, he likes those facing execution to suffer first. You will. I left and heard him calling after me, liberally using